The ongoing wildfires in Southern California are making it clear that climate change isn't debatable. Santa Ana wind gusts ranging from 50 to 75 miles per hour are constraining efforts by firefighters despite incremental progress. At least 28 lives have been lost, along with more than 15,000 structures, according to news reports. And the fires continue to rage across Southern California. How do we effectively manage our environment and prepare for greater intensity and frequency of severe natural disasters like wildfires in California and Oregon? The answer may be in the past practices ingrained in the stewardship of the land by indigenous peoples. Joining me on the exchange is Cassil Willie, an indigenous native and staff attorney at Save Californian Salmon, a nonprofit organization dedicated to policy change and community advocacy for people in Northern California who depend on salmon for a variety of reasons. Welcome, Cassil.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Cassil, before we get to our conversation, tell me about who you are and the work you do at Save California Salmon.
Sure. So I am a enrolled member of Walker River Paiute Reservation in Nevada, but I'm also Pomo, Wintu, and Wailaki tribes over in California, Northern California. And most of what I do at Save California Salmon is focused on legal issues and policy issues. So really engaging a lot with state agencies, federal agencies, and helping to sort of bridge the gap between tribes and agencies and help them better understand where the issues that tribes are concerned with, and sort of doing that back and forth between the agencies, just because oftentimes it's hard for tribes to do that engagement themselves because of limited resources or, lack of trust with between them and the state and federal agencies. So that's a little bit of what I do. I focus a lot on water policy in the Central Valley, but also up north.
Where did you grow up? How'd you get into this work?
I grew up in the Bay Area. So I grew up San Rafael, just north of San Francisco. And I sort of fell into this position, but I studied environmental studies, an undergraduate at USF San Francisco, and I always sort of leaned towards policy and law, and came to law school in Sacramento, where I was able to get a concentration in environmental and water law, and then saw this posting for Save California Salmon online and thought I would apply, and it really merged my passions, which is environmental law, and then also indigenous justice, environmental justice. And so that's sort of how I ended up here. And it's been really just a culmination of my passions, my two passions, protecting my community and also protecting the environment.
Okay, so let's frame our conversation around two big issues, stewardship and voice.
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous people have been stewards of the lands in California for many generations before colonialists even knew the place existed. And ever since California became a state in 1850, when the first governor publicly declared a war of extinction among the native peoples, indigenous tribes have been pushed aside and their knowledge dismissed or ignored. So let's start with how indigenous people have stewarded the land. Tell me about it.
So indigenous knowledge, or sometimes called traditional ecological knowledge, or TEK, is really a holistic understanding of the environment. It's not so compartmentalized like modern sciences might be, where it's focused on just the water or just the land. It's really a complete understanding of how all of those systems work together. And that type of knowledge has really led to more sustainable practices. So it's the understanding that when you go fishing, you don't overfish because you want there to be fish next year. And when you go out to pick flowers, you don't pick all the flowers. You want to leave some so that they'll go to seed next year. And so this type of holistic, sustainable environmental stewardship, it's really important, especially today in fighting climate change, because that type of understanding is essential to understand all the different aspects of climate change and how they work together and how they will impact us, and also how we can fight climate change.
A couple of years ago, High Country News published an article with the headline, "Cultural Fire is Good Fire, and California Needs More of It." Indigenous land stewards say cultural fires are key to building a fire-resilient landscape. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. You know, it's a practice that was done in California for millennia before anyone else came to California. And it's definitely become more of a mainstream idea, which has really been exciting to see public agencies really starting to embrace the fact that this practice, which had been outlawed in California before, is really actually has a purpose and it's not dangerous. A lot of people see fire and it's a threat to them because of what wildfires today have done, but it's really an effective way to manage the environment and it's not something people should fear so much, but really a tool that can be used to mitigate damage, mitigate harm for future fires, and especially if we're going to start seeing more fires as climate change progresses, it's really something that can be really useful.
My guest is Cassil Willie, an Indigenous native and staff attorney at Save California Salmon. Cassil, I'm looking at a memorandum that was sent to the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of the Interior on January 20th, the inauguration day of Donald Trump. And the subject line is "Putting People Over Fish, Stopping Radical Environmentalism to Provide Water to Southern California." And in this memorandum, it suggests that, well, it actually states, quote, "Today, this enormous water supply flows wastefully into the Pacific Ocean," referring to water being diverted because the removal of the dams. And the memorandum goes on to say, "The recent deadly and historically destructive wildfires in Southern California underscore why the state of California needs a reliable water supply and sound vegetation management practices in order to provide water desperately needed there, and why this plan must be immediately re-implemented." And so there's a from on high memorandum telling the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of the Interior to implement a plan or re-implement a plan that the Trump administration had that the Biden administration overruled. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, there's two issues I have with that. First is the idea that there's water being wasted going to the Pacific Ocean. Water that goes into the Pacific Ocean needs to go into the ocean for the survival of not only smelt, I know smelt is mentioned in that memorandum, but also salmon, which are facing extinction. And the salmon fishing season has been closed for the last 2 years, and based on early numbers, will likely be closed again this year. And the water is needs to go out to the Pacific Ocean for salmon to complete their migration up the Sacramento River. And so that enormous water supply not only benefits the environment, and that's aquatic species, avian species, terrestrial species, but it also benefits the state economy. The state salmon industry is a $1.4 billion per year industry, and the normal season provides 23,000 jobs a year. So the idea that we're putting people over fish is not really a correct idea, because people also depend on the fish. And so it's not really a true statement to say that this radical environmentalism is putting people over fish. It's just prioritizing different groups of people. I think the memorandum's focus is on agriculture in Southern California, providing water to those places versus the people that have depended on the salmon for generations, not just current commercial fisheries, but also the indigenous fisher people who have used salmon for ceremonies and as a traditional food source since time immemorial. And so that's one issue I have with that memorandum. Well, and then the second...
Go on.
The second is the idea that this water in the Delta would really save Southern California from fires. There was, I'm not sure if you saw a Fox News clip where they discussed that taking the Klamath dams out was why LA was burning and didn't have enough water, which is totally untrue because it's 600 miles away. And so this sort of rhetoric around Northern California being the only way for Southern California to have water to fight these fires is really just not an accurate statement. And should be focused on Los Angeles and not so much on taking water from Northern California to try and solve this problem.
Yeah, I think the firefighters have pushed back on that and debunked that propaganda. That the challenge that they have is the same as the challenge the tribes have, and that's having their voice heard. Because once a false statement, a false narrative is out there, it tends to run far and wide and quickly, and the truth runs very slowly. Tell me about the challenges you've experienced with the voices of tribes being heard and valued by the power structure.
It's been a battle. Certain state agencies are more receptive to hearing tribes and accommodating them if they can't make it to certain meetings, scheduling an additional meeting, or conducting more outreach. And so in some ways, tribal voices are being heard more frequently, at least at the state level. And tribal concerns are being incorporated more, but it's still very hard to get what tribes are saying to have that be understood by agencies, as I think where the struggle is now. So trying to get them to understand the importance of traditional ecological knowledge and how it can be applied, and also trying to get them to understand what cultural resources are when we're talking about protecting cultural resources, and sort of bridging the gap and educating about vocabulary and things that should be used, words that need to be used, and what needs to be considered when talking about tribal issues, I think, is where the struggle is now.
How involved are California tribes in the decision-making processes of forest management, water management, zoning policies, and land development in California?
They're minimally involved, I think. But again, it varies depending on the topic. But I think it's really important to make sure that tribes are getting the information about certain projects. In the past, it's, you know, the methods of consultation and contact have been sending one letter and then never reaching out again. And so now I think tribes are a little bit more aware of the processes and so able to be involved more. And I think there's a little bit more intertribal communication, so they're able to pass along information to other tribes in their area and become more involved, but it's definitely harder for tribes to be involved.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining the exchange, Kasil.
Yeah, thank you for having me.